This is the Storage Unpacked podcast.
This is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast this week at Flash Memory Summit in Santa Clara. I always want to say San Diego, and I don't know why I do that, but it's Santa Clara, definitely. I'm joined by Eric Kohlberg from Infinidat. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Chris. Good to be here.
How you doing?
I'm great. You know, it's always fun here at Flash Memory Summit, and boy, it's a big show this year.
It is, absolutely, yeah. It's a bit quiet now in the press room where we are, but other than that, yes, it has been an interesting show so far. Still another day to go as well, actually, in fact.
Right.
Tell us what you do for Infinidat.
So I run Infinidat's cloud business, and our strategy in general of turning great low-cost, large-scale storage systems into services that customers can consume as they wish. And then, as a side project, I work on our alliance relationships with a few partners, take care of analysts, do other corporate kind of fun stuff.
Wonderful. And thank you for joining me today. What we thought would be an interesting conversation is really to step back and look at the amount of memory hierarchy we're starting to see in the persistent memory side of things. Now, I say persistent memory, and perhaps I should class it as persistent storage. I think that's probably a better definition, isn't it?
Probably, yeah. And I would say that, in general, at some level, what we're seeing is just the natural effects of economics. Customers want to spend as little as they can to get data storage on a price per gig basis, assuming that it meets their performance, their resiliency requirements, their feature requirements, and such. And so, whereas early in the development of the solid-state array market, we saw people just gravitating toward flash in general, now we're starting to see people migrate to different categories of flash, different emerging memory technologies, and we're seeing a universe of startups and other companies trying to knit that all into a cohesive picture and storyline for their customers.
Yeah. So, I mean, even just looking today at what we've seen at this event, there's Everspin, I'm talking about MRAM. There's even talk of 5 bits per cell. I was going to call it 5 bits per cell QLC, but of course it wouldn't be, would it? That's what QLC is, 4 bits per cell. I mean, what are we going to call it? PLC? Penta-level cell? I don't know.
Sure there's a marketing expert working on that right now.
Absolutely. That doesn't really matter that much, what the name is going to be. But obviously, that represents, for example, a level of storage that will be very low in endurance, but potentially a bit cheaper. Now, we're seeing all these different hierarchies, and as you said, whereas previously we perhaps would have just said, it's flash, there's one or two variants if we're lucky, we'll just build a system as flash. We're having to think a lot harder now about how we build systems and how we optimize our data, again, across this tiering on different types of storage.
Absolutely. And so we happen to think at Infinidat we were an early innovator in that area. And it's kind of fun being at the Flash Summit with a company that primarily uses hard drives as the back-end media. But
we didn't really mention that fact, did we? That's an interesting one, that you're here at an event where, you know, you're the proponent of hard drives in a Flash Memory Summit event. But, you know, we don't have to pick you up for that too much.
Well, and to be clear, we love flash, and we love DRAM and emerging memory technologies as well. It's just the economic profile of those technologies, combined with the technical aspects of their operation, mean that they don't make sense for every workload. And as I said, even within, if you restrict the search to just semiconductor-based memories, you still have that hierarchy starting to emerge.
Yeah. Now, let's get back to why we think that's even happening in the first place. I always think a parallel in history is a good thing to do. So let's talk about the hard drive parallel, because we know that when drives first came out, they were fairly specific. I'm trying to think back to some of the earliest drives I ever used that weren't an IBM 3380 or a 3390, which was a long time ago. But, you know, the standard, what should we call it, Seagate, Shugart type drive, you know, the standard 5 1/4 inch drive.
Yep.
But very quickly, we suddenly found that we had 5 1/4, 3 1/2, 1 and a bit. What was the? There was a
1.8 inch. IBM micro drives.
Yeah. So very quickly, the form factor was varied, but also we had spin speed, we had density, we had enterprise drives, we had consumer drives. So that market split into many, many different devices, I guess, based on price, performance, the usual standard metrics. Do you think that's what we're seeing again?
Absolutely. And it's more complicated than the hard drive market at some level because you have different categories of memory that have fundamentally different performance aspects, whereas all hard drive performance is driven by rotational speed and the ability to move the head around the platter. With NAND-based devices, you're talking about, in general, latencies in the category of, let's say, 10 to 100 microseconds. With storage class memory devices, particularly things like Intel Optane, you are potentially an order of magnitude lower latency. It's not a 2x improvement, it's a 10x improvement, and that requires a different approach to system architecture to properly harness that.
Yeah, and you see a lot of diagrams being drawn up where people show endurance versus latency versus cost versus capacity, and you know, you could probably draw about half a dozen different diagrams with different axes on there. But essentially, as you said, you're seeing that NAND, which is actually in itself, we'll come back to that in a minute, NAND, which is one area, storage class memory, but you're also seeing things like MRAM from Everspin, which is being positioned as super high endurance. Like, I think they put on a chart something like 10 to the 10. I can't remember what the number of write cycles.
Right.
I think they said you'd have to write to it for 15 years in order for it to wear out, so it's effectively limitless. But that can't be built at any sort of high capacity.
Exactly. So, if all you can get is a gigabit per chip, you know, you've got a while to go until you can incorporate that as, say, a primary data storage mechanism. However, for cache or for metadata, you know, there's a lot of promise for those kinds of technologies.
So I think there is multiple axes against which you have to compare these devices, first of all. And then, even then, within those devices, there are subsets of things. So we briefly touched on the idea of five-level cell. And we know that as every level of generation of NAND has come out, the endurance level is reduced. Now, I would say that from when it first came out to when it became mainstream, the vendors within the controller or in other ways have managed to improve that resilience a little bit, that endurance, sorry. But inevitably, that's the trend for those devices. But also, we would see a diminishing level of return. Every bit you add, you don't get double the capacity anymore. You get a fraction more capacity depending on what bit you're adding in at that point. So those devices themselves now become a whole range of different scenarios that you could choose from.
Absolutely. And actually, it's not just the resilience that's critical to think about as we get to these extremely dense NAND-based solutions. It's also the performance, because it turns out that decoding and discerning between the different charge levels in a given cell becomes even more complicated the more levels you're trying to pick from. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see the real performance implications of these extremely dense flash solutions. It's no longer the case that more density equals more performance like it once was in the early days of the flash market.
Yeah, so let's just touch on the idea of, we could say tiering, couldn't we? We could talk about it being tiering, but tiering was one way of being able to push data to different types of media. And inevitably, when we were building large systems, we might put in a tier of cheaper storage, a tier of more expensive storage. I have a feeling those days are over, because we're in a position now where we can use many other techniques to manage that scenario. And your platform is one example of that, where you know, you're doing location-based placement of the data so that when you retrieve it back, you can retrieve it back efficiently, and you're putting caching in there and other techniques. But one thing that I thought was really interesting was to see MRAM being used within a flash drive to remove the supercaps.
Right.
And there's a good example of a hybrid of device hierarchies of solid-state media.
Absolutely. And at the device level, I think we're going to see increasing adoption of that kind of hybrid approach. I mean, all storage device, or all SSDs at least, have some amount of DRAM and some amount of flash involved to deliver the data just in a single, say, 2.5-inch form factor. And if you need power fail protection, you need a supercap, or you need to consider something else. But as the density of the NAND increases, you need more and more local fast storage. So I think we're going to see more and more adoption of emerging memory technologies to solve the problem of addressing power fail resilience requirements of that high performance local storage within SSDs.
So how do customers go around trying to understand what this market is doing? Because when we could just go to a vendor and say, give me an all flash array, I mean, even some of the vendors today still just use a single tier, but when we just said, give me an all flash array, that was pretty straightforward. You didn't have to think too much. But things are going to get relatively complex, I would have thought. You know, what's your view about where that market's likely to head?
I think if it doesn't get easier for users, then the vendors are doing the community a disservice. And frankly, the vendors who are making it more complicated, like I was shocked to see the CMO of another vendor I won't name say storage is going to get more complicated over time. I think those kinds of vendors are going to have a difficult competitive position looking forward. The fact is that IT practitioners are becoming generalists by and large, and the consumerization of IT is feeding into this cycle of you have to make things easier or else you can't compete. So I think it's inevitable that even though the underlying technologies are getting super complicated and there's tons of room for innovation in that area, the way that it's delivered to customers and the choices customers ultimately have to make have to get simpler. No two ways about it.
Do you think that's going to come through more advanced products, or do you think that's requires some sort of software step up? Because, you know, we could look back and say 10 years ago, and we could look back and say 30 years ago, we had technologies that were incredibly simple, like DFHSM, I think, was one that I think you've mentioned to me before we started recording. And as a technology, I remember that because one of my first ever jobs was to look at the configuration parameters of DFHSM for a particular client, and they thought I was an expert in that particular product. And they said to me, right, go and tell us what we're doing wrong in our configuration. And I remember looking and going, I have no idea. Get the manual out, go through every single parameter and work out what I think is the best option. And we went from there. But it was a very simple hierarchy of disk to tape, effectively. There was, you know, that was it. Whereas we ended up with FAST and some other types of hierarchical management of the data that would do that dynamically. Do we need better versions of those solutions, do you think? And I say that on reflection of the fact that you obviously have that within your platform.
We've spent a lot of time thinking about that problem, for sure, and I think it's not a better version of the old tiering story as much as it's a different approach to how you integrate different media devices into a hierarchy
right. That
ultimately is invisible to the customer. The user of storage solutions shouldn't have to think about where exactly the data resides within the system or on what kind of media the data resides. And so to facilitate that, you need robots. You can't expect, you know, the days of a customer manually tuning and tweaking where exactly the hot bits go and where exactly the cold bits go.
Yeah, that was a bit of a nightmare. That was probably the biggest time sink of anything that I ever did, was being told, we've got a performance issue, go and have a look at this box and see where we've got the gaps. Does that make it more complicated for you as a company, as system designers, because you've now got a wider choice of technologies to choose from? Does it make it more difficult for you to work out how to be competitive? Because, for example, you've taken hard drives and added flash on top of that to give you that level of performance, but actually low cost. You know, it's going to make your job more or less complicated.
Yeah, absolutely. More of the burden goes to the vendor in both developing the products and also in marketing them. Because as you alluded to, it becomes more difficult to discriminate performance claims on the part of the end users. For example, if you have a system that varies its behavior dynamically in response to different workloads. So the days of SPC benchmarks and things like that being an actually useful comparison tool for the capabilities of storage, they're gone.
You're right. And it's really funny to look at some of those benchmarks, especially when you see vendors just cram in DRAM into a system and you think, okay, so you, without a doubt, unless that working set is bigger than the size of the DRAM, you without a doubt are going to game that benchmark. So they do become pretty useless, I guess, in that sense.
This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
So let's talk about platforms and solutions, Eric, for a second. So your company, for example, Infinidat, uses a mix of technologies already today. How does it do that, and how does it use it within your platform?
So we have a software-driven technology called Neural Cache that allows us to basically take the best of NAND, of DRAM, and hard drive media in order to get to high performance for mixed workloads. And Neural Cache basically assigns activity vectors, which are pointers to the history and predictors of the future of what's going to happen for a given I/O pattern. And there's lots that we can go into implementation details, but I'll say at a high level at least that we've made that very fast and very effective at multi-petabyte scale. And that last piece is perhaps the most challenging bit in all of this.
Right. So what happens if you decided that you didn't want to use hard drives anymore? Now, I've spoken to Brian many times, and Brian said to me, hard drives have got a lifetime going a long, long way, and a long future, and a long growth pattern. I'm not sure that I'm seeing that as much as I'm seeing that in certain other platforms, like QLC or, you know, whatever its successor will be. So could you swap out hard drives and put in another technology and still see the same benefit on your platform?
Absolutely, and we've actually demonstrated, for example, with Optane drives included in our systems on our blog. There's a recent demonstration video. So we adopt whatever media technology hits the right combination of capacity, performance, and economics.
Okay, brilliant. Right, so let's look at another example. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to Howard. Everybody knows Howard. In fact, I sat down with him at lunchtime earlier today. He's now working for Vast Data. And they've got a platform which is a perfect example of a solution that's taking this new media and using it in a very different way.
Absolutely. I mean, we think that, in general, solutions that mix media technologies are the future. So it's good to see more investment and activity in the next generation of startups as we get to mature growth state that underscores the importance of a mixed media strategy.
Yeah. And I quite like their solution because it had some interesting technical components that actually very specifically used the media a certain way. You know, the fact that they were using NVMe connected devices so that it was one big NVMe namespace, but also they were using the persistence of the Optane as a way to basically bypass the need to use cache, which was, you know, both were clever scenarios. And obviously that reflects to the ability of that particular media to deliver that. Now, if we start looking at the wider market, I'm sure the other vendors will look at using technology like that too. HPE used SCM in the three-part platform, and I'm sure they're using it in Primera. You know, that was effectively another layer of cache of acceleration. The one area I think that could be very interesting to see is what the software-defined storage guys are going to do. Because now they've got a huge range of technologies they've got to somehow decide whether to support. And it makes me wonder that whether the system vendors have a step up on those guys. Because you've got more time and effort to put into building systems that do this, whereas that's not really the way they work.
Yeah, and in general, if we look at the category of build-it-yourself storage systems, where you've got a smart software layer and then you or maybe your integrator puts together all the pieces, there's just a lot more degrees of freedom there.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially for the smaller companies, they can't maintain an extensive interop list, and it becomes difficult to precisely size or precisely specify the performance or the resiliency behavior of these kinds of systems when customers could choose from 50 different varieties of a given storage medium. So I'm all for the value of software. There's no question that software is ultimately what's going to be driving the value for these large-scale deployments, whether you happen to consume it in a pre-built appliance or whether you happen to be consuming it in the form of software you layer on your own components. But it does get a lot more complicated for people who choose that latter path because now there are so many different options they might pick from.
So maybe there's a middle ground here. And I'm making this up as I go along because I don't really know the answer to this, but I'm just thinking that if you look at the way that the industry is sort of dividing up, we get systems providers like yourselves who are building very much appliances that they're shipping, and that's pretty much your only model, I think. You don't ship software at this point?
We actually have released software in very special circumstances, but by and large, we ship pre-built integrated solutions.
At the other end of the scale, you get software-defined, especially open-source solutions that are built around the generic features of, say, Flash or something like that. But in the middle, then, there's that scenario of appliance vendors who also sell software equivalents of their platforms. Now, it makes me wonder whether they've got a little bit of advantage here because they're building appliances they're shipping and understanding the maturity of those Flash technologies and solid-state technologies. Yet, you could buy it as a software solution and buy your own hardware.
Yeah.
So they could be in a strong position, to be honest.
I think customers want freedom of choice, at least in principle. I think when you get to practical implementations, sometimes there's the philosophical battle doesn't win when it comes to actually deciding a bill of materials, building an integration center, running your own tests and things like that. But certainly at the very largest scale, I mean, the path to hyperscale is through software, no question.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Yeah, you think, oh, it'd be great to build it, you know, get all the pieces and build it yourself. It's like the idea of building a kit car. You know, you think, oh, wouldn't it be great to get somebody to ship all the parts and me spend, you know, however many hours in the garage building it. But how many people actually get a kit car and get them somebody else to build it for them? Because when it comes down to it, you're like, do I really trust myself?
No question. And you know, we have 100 petabytes in our test lab because of that exact problem. Ultimately, there's, especially when you're operating at very large scale, which is where we play, there are issues that can pop up when you're dealing with 100 petabyte deployments that you won't see, or you're statistically unlikely to encounter if all you're working with is individual, let's say, shelves of data storage devices.
Yeah, and I think you've got another advantage, as have the vendors in that middle ground that we talked about, and that's the wisdom of the storage crowd, as in you've got the ability to collect data from the field, which you can then feed into your ongoing development, maintenance, patching, fault fixing, future design, whatever it happens to be, and you can use that knowledge from the field, which you just do not get at that SDS end. Because I don't think any of the SDS providers have got any solution to make that work.
I agree. It's definitely a more disjointed ecosystem. And I would say that that leads to a broader topic of the value of analytics and the value of cloud-based solutions that allow you to capture that insight from the field and use it to make things better for customers.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit, before we wrap up, Eric, let's just talk a bit about where we think this market might go in terms of the solid-state technology. Now, we clearly have seen from a maturity perspective that it's widened because we've seen more and more technology come out where we've got multiple levels of flash, we've got, you know, the new SCM type technologies. Where do we think it's going to go? And I'll give you a few pointers here on what I'm thinking. First of all, we initially saw, as new flash came out, we would expect to see less and less SLC, less and less MLC being used, and more and more being pushed down to TLC. So we would effectively expect to see, although there are many types of it, the actual amount shipped in each area would be reduced. So we'd see a more narrow focus. Another example is we haven't seen what I would class as a next generation of Optane yet. We've seen one version of that. We haven't seen what they're going to do next. So are we in a position where we're going to continually see this widen out, or would you think we're going to see it narrow? I mean, what's your opinion about where this market's headed?
I think over the next 5 years, it's definitely in an expansionary mode. I think that things like, for example, Intel and Micron's corporate divorce and the destinations of the Optane technology or 3D crosspoint technology, that element of the storage landscape is definitely going to expand. Yep. I think we're seeing the reemergence of SLC category technologies as people deal with the resiliency challenges and the performance challenges associated with the super dense NAND technologies. And I think we're, more broadly, we're going to continue to see the chip-based solutions led by where the consumers want to go, which is cheaper and denser. So you're going to see different flavors peel off with different varying rates of prevalence that will ultimately contribute to more foundational media building blocks that system designers and that the vendors in this space need to put together for their enterprise clients.
Okay, and does that then lead to new solutions? Are we now going to see, like we've seen, we talk about yourselves, we talk about VAST, are we now going to see whole generations of new solutions coming along that effectively wipe out all of the old technology?
I think the answer to that is absolutely yes. There's the vendors that are going to win in this universe, and the customers who are going to benefit the most are the ones who mix media types. And to do that effectively requires a lot of different skills. We think we have an early advantage there, but it's exciting because it's clear that there's momentum in the market overall toward this mixed media future.
Okay. Now, one thing that makes me think, as a thought to perhaps leave us with at this point, is that inevitably architectures have a finite lifetime. And perhaps that lifetime is based on the fact that new media comes along, that usurps it, because you can build better platforms using the newer media that work better than the platforms that existed in the, you know, in the past. Does that seem like a reasonable hypothesis?
I think it's absolutely reasonable. I think that software drives ultimately that rate of innovation to leverage that new media effectively is a critical part of that stack. But technology is a cyclical market. And we're heading down a stage in that cycle where we're going to have more media types and more varieties of solutions with different economic profiles to meet customers' needs.
Okay. I think that's a great note to leave it on. Before we go, though, if anybody wants to stalk you online, follow you, listen to your comments about, you know, what we've talked about or your other thoughts, where's the best place for them to go to find you?
You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/ecolbook.
And in terms of Infinidat,
infinidat.com.
I think even I could have worked that one out. Okay, thanks, Eric. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Chris.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked, or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.